Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, October the 12th. A very good morning and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, vote counting is underway in Guinea after a peaceful election day. Our correspondent reports from the capital, Conakry.
Conakry centre for a bit, and there were long queues and people were patiently waiting in line to vote, but it's tranquil, disciplined and quiet.
And as the world marks International Day of the Girl Child, we profile the work of a young woman who fights against inhuman cultural practices in Kenya.
I grew up in a typical Samburu village. Growing up as a Samburu girl, there are a lot of challenges. Throughout my schooling, my classmates would be brought out of class for early marriage.
These stories plus learning by air coming in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Vote counting is underway in Guinea after the polls on Sunday to elect the country's next president. Eight candidates, including incumbent President Alpha Condé, are contesting for the presidency. President Condé is tipped to win a second term, but the main opposition leader, Selu Darlene Jallow, has vowed not to accept the result. It's the second time the West African country is holding a democratic presidential election since independence in 1958. International observers said it was largely peaceful on polling day, despite the clashes that preceded it. My colleague Jean Ayeko Kumet has been speaking to our correspondent Bram Postumos, who is currently in the capital, Conakry.
I've been around Conakry centre for a bit, and there were long queues and people were patiently waiting in line to vote, but it's tranquil, disciplined and quiet.
Okay, is the country's President Alpha Conde expected to win since he didn't make any political campaigns?
He has been all out over the country, although it wasn't necessarily called a political campaign, but he has been making the rounds of the country, like his main challenger, the former Prime Minister Selu Darlene Jallow. To be honest, I think a first round, as the slogan goes of the presidential party, which is one strike and you're knockout, that is mathematically speaking pretty difficult to maintain. If you go back to the 2010 presidential elections, which basically had the same composition of challengers, Mr. Condé, the president, Mr. Jallow, his main challenger, and Sidya Touré, another former prime minister who consistently comes third, then you will see that a second round is almost inevitable, as Mr. Touré gets around 18%, Mr. Jallow gets around 35-40%, and Mr. Condé on his own barely scrapes through 20%, but he did win last time because he built an enormous coalition, which is still largely in place. So I think a second round is pretty much a certainty.
Do we expect just a second round, or is there a possibility that he will come to terms with some of his opponents and probably say, okay, we build another coalition government?
Well, this has been tried for the longest time. I mean, Alpha Condé has always said after the 2010 elections that he wanted to build that big national coalition, and he always claims that the opposition has rejected this. Now, given the controversies and the polarization which has been going on in the run-up to these elections, I think building a coalition as it stands now is probably going to be quite difficult to imagine. Surely there will be coalition building going on if we go into a second round, and from there may emerge something like an inclusive government. But for now, the tone is very polarizing. And just to give you an idea, in his last campaign closing speech, Mr. Jallow, the main opposition challenger, has made it clear in so many words that he will not accept any result that doesn't go his way.
Bram Postumos in Conakry. On Saturday, just a day to the polls, clashes broke out in several areas of the capital, Conakry. Supporters of the ruling party and opposition members hurled stones at each other. Why are elections in Guinea always marred by violence? My colleague Isaac Mugabe put that question to Paul Melly, a researcher with the British think tank Chatham House in London.
I think it's partly because for more than 50 years, the country was a dictatorship. People didn't really have political choices. And so when there was opposition movement, opposition protest, This usually took the form of street demonstrations that were then very fiercely repressed by the military, often using live gunfire, for example. And then the crowds would react back against that with quite strong protests, stone throwing and so on from their side. And that culture became really quite ingrained for a very, very long time. It's only over the last 5 years that Guinea has had a genuinely functioning plural political system, and still the grassroots base, particularly in the urban areas, the urban youth base of the main parties, haven't completely adapted to the notion that politics can be about choice, and that for when they're in power, don't have everything, and when they're in opposition, they still have a share of influence. That culture of compromise hasn't yet fully developed, and it really, the roots lie in the very deep, long history of more than five decades of dictatorship in Guinea.
Regional bodies like ECOWAS seem to do little whenever such situations occur. Why?
Well, I think it's been particularly difficult in Guinea because of the way the political leaders have behaved since democracy arrived. Essentially, in the 2010 election, that was quite badly marked by the party that ended up, the party of President Alpha Condé, who ended up as head of state. That party was willing to play the ethnic card during that election. Although Mr. Condé himself did not do so, many of his senior supporters tried to mobilize feeling against the Peul, the Fulani, the main ethnic group who support the UFDG, the biggest opposition party.
Had the election been postponed, do you think it would have given the opposition an edge over current President Alpha Condé?
If the elections had just been postponed by several weeks, arrangements to be put in place, I don't think it would make much difference. But the critical thing was, if the elections had been delayed until the local municipal elections had taken place first, that could have created a different situation. Because at present, local government is entrusted to officials who've been appointed by central government.
Paul Melly, a researcher at Chatham House in London.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Africa, the Council of the ruling African National Congress ANC party has directed the government to withdraw its membership from the International Criminal Court. This came out at the end of a three-day council meeting in Johannesburg on Sunday. More than 4,000 delegates had met to review the government's implementation of previous policies that the party had recommended and also make new ones. The ANC members made a number of new recommendations related to policy and implementation. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo report.
After 3 days of robust discussions and scrutiny of government policies and whether they have been implemented as directed by the party, ministers were left with their plates full and with a lot to do. The NGC delegates resolved that South Africa must withdraw from the ICC. The country got into loggerheads with the ICC after the court put it to task for failing to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. Obed Bapela, the party's international relations subcommittee chairperson, said the party believes that the ICC is now partisan.
The ICC has lost its direction, unfortunately, and is no longer pursuing that principle of an instrument that is fair for everybody. There are powerful nations that are also refusing to be members of the ICC, and yet they've got these unfettered powers to then refer matters to the ICC.
The NGC also urged the government to speed up the land redistribution programs after it emerged that the government owns only 14% of the land, while the private sector and individuals own 79%. Togo Didiza from the party's Land Reform Commission said there is need to fast-track the redistribution of land.
There should be equitable access to land for women and that their interests be protected. Unemployed graduates who have done agriculture, these must be prioritized for land reform, and there should be serious targeting of rural youth who may want to go into agriculture as a career.
Concerns were also raised in the slow pace of implementation of policies in the areas that include service delivery, media reform, job creation, poverty alleviation and inequality. Despite all these challenges, ANC President Jacob Zuma said there is still a good story to tell.
A lot has been achieved. More of our people have been lifted out of extreme poverty.
But others say the ANC's performance in the 2016 local government elections will reveal if indeed Zuma's administration has a good story to tell.
Tuzo Kumalu reporting. On Sunday, the world marked the 2015 International Day of the Girl Child. In Kenya, deep inside the northern plains of Samburu, hundreds gathered in a small village to celebrate the work of one woman, Josephine Kulia. Josephine has put up a fight against old cultural practices that infringe on the rights of the girl child. Female genital mutilation and early marriages are culturally accepted in Kenya's Samburu land. But Josephine Kulia, a Samburu woman herself, has vowed not to rest until these practices are stopped. Andrew Wasiki filed this report.
In Kenya's northern plains of Samburu, culture is still stronger than the law. Young girls in Samburu land do not have the choice to go to school as they are wedded to the elderly by the age of 11 in a ceremony called bidding. Female genital mutilation is practiced in broad daylight and is considered as a vital traditional practice that every Samburu girl wishing to be called a woman must undergo. 32-year-old Josephine Kulea has vowed to save girls in the Samburu community from harmful cultural practices such as female genital mutilation and forced marriages.
My name is Josephine Kulea and I grew up in a typical Samburu village. And growing up as a Samburu girl, there are a lot of challenges. Throughout my schooling, my classmates would be brought out of class for early marriage, maybe bidding. I really felt for my classmates, and I got to go all the way up to college because my parents were supportive.
Girls as young as 7 years old are booked by Samburu warriors known locally as Morans. The warriors aged 30 and above show interest in a young girl by presenting a set of beads to the girl's parents. From this moment onward, the warrior is assured of the girl's hand in marriage as soon as she has been circumcised. Once a girl has been bidded, the warrior is allowed to have sex with her, but conception is out of the question.
As much as people are denying, especially some Samburus are denying bidding, but bidding is real. Ladies feel that it's a big issue, but majority of the men do not see it as an issue because it's the women who go through these challenges. We don't have much support from the men.
It was after going to school that Josephine realized something was wrong with her community back home.
So I decided to come back and do something, intervene on the issues going on. So I started rescuing girls from the harmful cultural practices. I also feel we've really marginalized ourselves because holding on to some harmful cultural practices has really made us not progress.
She is the founder of Samburu Girls Foundation, and she has so far rescued over 1,000 girls from female genital mutilation and other cases of early child marriages in Samburu land. She says that tackling FGM has been tough, but she won't give up as children are scarred for life every single passing day.
Culture here is stronger than the law, so it's proving difficult for most people to approach it head on, but I decided let me do it because at some point somebody has to do it.
Josephine has received numerous accolades from national and international organizations.
Andrew Wasike with that report. It's time now to enjoy another episode of the Crossroads Generation, a Learning by Ear production.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there and welcome to Crossroads Generation, a story about the challenges confronting young Africans today.
We're standing at the crossroads, we're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future starts today.
This is the final episode of Season 4, Facing New Challenges. In recent episodes, Nikki and his wife Mercy have had a lot to deal with, partly as a result of Nikki's HIV infection. It was the members of the Living Positive support group who gave them new hope. Mercy's brothers Kadu and Banda are about to take on a different challenge. They are starting at a new school, Kisimba's Special School, where disabled and non-disabled students learn together. Among them are Sama and her disabled sister Noni. The last encounter between Kadu and Noni some time ago did not go very well. So let's see what happens today when the three kids meet again at school. We'll also finally learn what happened to Dan's father, Kanyama. He was swept away by the Tandika River during the floods, and so far nobody knows anything of his whereabouts. Dan himself, always passionate and impulsive, has been rather outspoken in criticizing the government.
Our government is very good at one thing, waiting. It waits until something actually happens, and then the politicians come bumping out here in their 4x4s to tell us they are sorry.
Will the corrupt and inefficient government of Kisimba take this lying down? Dan's girlfriend Tina is worried. She knows that Dan is living and working in Kisimba without papers. Let's find out what happens in the concluding episode of this series, As Strong as a Crocodile.
Mom, what do you want me to do?
Keep looking for your father, Dan. That's what I want you to do.
Mom, I've done my best and I'll keep trying. I've been to hospitals, police stations, even mortuaries, but...
Police! Open up! I said open this door right now!
I'm coming! Mom, let me call you back. There's someone at the door.
Open this door at once or we'll break it down!
I'm coming!
Oh, Mr. District Commissioner, what are you doing here?
Dan Kanyama. You are under arrest for being in Kisimba illegally and running an illegal business.
What? Is this because I asked questions in the meeting?
Do you think you can sneak into this country and do whatever you please? Incite the people with your Move the Dumpsite campaign? And do you think the government won't find out?
I haven't done anything wrong, Mr. DC.
You had a good chance of making it here in Kisimba, boy. But instead you decided you wanted to... play the politician. Now it's time for you to reap what you sowed. Officer!
Yes, sir?
Arrest him.
Right away, sir.
No, wait! You can't do this!
Shut up and move it!
Please, Mr. DC, please! No!
Hey, keep moving!
This is unfair!
Where am I?
Oh, the stranger awakes.
Who are you?
My name is Ikui. I found you washed up on the banks of the river, and I dragged you here all by myself.
What is this place?
You're in Luvanga.
Huh?
We're a small tribe that lives far away from what people call civilization. We are the protectors of the forest.
But why have you bound my hands and feet?
Shh! Your turn now. Who are you and where do you come from?
I can't remember my name or where I come from. I don't know where I am.
Oh, I see. You've lost your memory. No need to worry. They don't call me Ikui the Wise for nothing. We will give you some herbal medicine that will make you remember everything.
Damn it. How long do you think this will take?
Maybe weeks or months. Even years? Are you in a hurry?
I don't know. I just feel there's something I need, something I have to do, something urgent.
That's a good sign. You rest and then tomorrow we will start your treatment.
I mean...
Shh! No speaking now. Go to sleep.
Wait. I've remembered. My name is Kanyama.
Hi, Sama.
Kadu, what are you doing here?
Chanita said I would find you here.
That's not what I mean. I mean, what are you doing here at this school?
My mom enrolled us here. It's free for children from poor backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good to see you again, Sama. And Noni, too.
Hi, I'm Noni.
Hi, I'm Kadu.
I'm Noni. I'm class one.
Sama.
Yes, Kadu?
I'm very sorry for how I behaved when I first met Noni.
It's okay, Kadu. People sometimes get scared when they see something they don't understand.
I didn't really know then, but I know now that people with disabilities are, well, they're different. But I don't have to be afraid of something. I'm sure we can be friends.
Yes, Kadu, that will be nice.
So, will you play with me again?
Of course, Kadu.
I, Noni, I play too.
Yeah.
Welcome. Welcome to today's meeting.
Thank you.
My name is Lucy and I am HIV positive.
Hi, Lucy.
As usual, we are here to encourage and draw strength from each other through our experiences as people living with HIV. Yeah. Well, we have a member here today who has something he'd like to share with us. Join me in welcoming a man as strong as a crocodile, a survivor, my friend and brother in strife, Nikki Jumbe.
Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you. I am very aware of what these meetings have done for me in terms of changing my attitude towards HIV and AIDS. When I first learned that I was HIV positive, I thought my life had come to an end. I hardly slept. I lost my appetite for all the things I love doing, like exercise and eating. Oh, yes. I really love eating. Even though in the beginning, hardly anyone knew about my status, I still felt as if the whole world had deserted me. But there was one person who did know I was HIV positive, and that was the person who made me think again. Because she stood by me and decided to marry me anyway. She, and she alone, is responsible for my being here now. Darling, please stand up wherever you are so I can show you off. There she is. My wife and my best friend, Mercy Msoto Jumbe. Darling Mercy, thank you for making me realize that being HIV positive is not the beginning of the end.
And with that, we wrap up the fourth season of Crossroads Generation Facing New Challenges. Such a lot has happened this season. If you want to know what Nikki thinks about everything that's happened, just have a look at his video diary on our website dw.de/LBE. Here, you can also listen to all the previous episodes. Thank you for being with us all through this fourth season of Crossroads Generation, a Learning by Ear project brought to you by Deutsche Welle. The story was written by James Muhando. Until next time, so long.
And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. Vote counting is underway in Guinea after a peaceful election day. For your responses, send us a text message to +491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. I am Abubakar Jallo, and until next time, bye.